Cutting Through the Spin, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And you're very welcome back to the second hour of Monday show. Good morning, if you're just after joining us. Where have you been? Anyway, lots of you are texting in, so let's catch up on some of your comments in relation to the priest who refused Deputy Colin Burke communion because of how he voted in the repeal referendum. A caller says, I'm afraid the priest was completely wrong. They're not to give the host. If priests had that reason for not, there'd be no sale for Holy Communion at all. Another, Deputy Colin Burke deliberately went to receive Holy Communion from Father Gabriel Burke when there were two other priests officiating at the service. How can we determine that? Deputy Burke had been refused communion by Friday. Is that before Friday? Gabriel on a previous... Oh, sorry, I beg your pardon. He'd been refused communion by Father Gabriel on a previous occasion for the same reason. This was nothing more than a publicity stunt. I never heard of him before this. The priest is entitled to follow the regulations of his faith, regardless of whether or not we agree with them. There was no need for this incident to occur in the first place. A politician will never walk away from a publicity opportunity. Now, I think there's an awful lot of conclusions being drawn there that we can't state for a fact. But it is important at this point, perhaps, to directly quote quote the Pope. Pope Francis said that he's never refused the Eucharist to anyone. So Pope Francis himself says he's never refused the Eucharist to anybody. A caller says, I think the priest is justified. How can you vote for something so against God and expect to stand and receive communion? That's a big problem in this country. Nobody takes religion seriously at all. But also you can be for and against legislation and your feelings not to be not to be based in religion too. Sometimes we shouldn't forget religion doesn't own everything. Right, people are very fast with... Sorry, this is in relation to the football match. People are very fast forward with no patience. 12 months ago, Jim got an unconfident group of players with no energy or belief. What he did with them in a matter of a few months was a miracle. It shows the leadership and genius of Jim McGuinness. That project is 2 to 3 years in the making. I'm reading all night armchair a-holes saying they are boring and not good enough after the loss. I'm tearing my hair out. Really, I never saw those. Reading on, they are ahead of their time, exceptional performance for the hard matches in Ulster, and they won, by the way. Then the tough matches or rounds that came quickly after. Are people thinking with their brains at all or what? Did you ever participate in tough sports at a senior level, they ask? Semi-final of an All-Ireland this year is a massive achievement. There's many in the team who are young and inexperienced. They've done all-star stuff. That tank of a man, Damien Comer, didn't score today. If he told Jim that last week, he might say, well, we'll probably beat Galway. Galway were physically strong and Donegal were drained from far tougher games. I can't say anymore. Donegal were class this first year under Jim again, and his college long-term friend, Pádraig Joyce, said the same. Bright future ahead, be positive. Sorry, I go the long way around saying things always. That's all right. Good luck to the legend, Pádraig Joyce in Galway. I have a lot of friends in Galway and they are gentlemen. Donegal's day will come soon again. As I say, I wasn't privy or didn't see any negativity, really. You know, any nasty negativity. I think people are entitled to sort of say, oh, we took shots when there were better passing options and stuff. You know, people pay a lot of money to watch a game. They can say that kind of stuff. I never saw anything personal or hateful towards the team or Jim, thankfully, but that listener must have. So who do we go for now in the final? Are we back in Armagh or are we back in Galway? And why? Let me know. 086 60 25,000. Are we back in Galway or are we back in Armagh? I was backing Armagh against Kerry, I'm not going to lie, but I think I'd back Galway against Armagh, if I'm honest. That's just my instinct. Greg, I'm hearing from America it was a publicity stunt by some brainwashed Trump supporter. God bless America with them, two candidates for the next president. Well, it's very important that we continue to think for ourselves and think freely, and also consider that this person would not have been capable of grazing President Trump on purpose. And I can't see any way at all in that this could have been manufactured or what have you. I know we're always searching for answers. Other than what we're told. But seriously, folks, we have to use our brains here. Very balanced there by Greg with that Democratic lady. Not enough commentary on mainstream media rehowing God's name. This assassination, or this assassin, or would-be assassin, got to creep up on a roof 150 metres away. As Christie says, we see plenty of coverage of Secret Service running every blade of grass over. Also, how Mr. Biden made the comment, put Trump in a bullseye. How could Secret Service shoot him dead 3 seconds after it happened? Because they were watching the whole time. That's definitely a legitimate question. Did they not figure out what was going on? Maybe their view was obscured. It'll all come out in the wash, but there are some serious questions to be asked. Could you please wish all at Lagan Hawks Football Club in Manor Cunningham taking part in the Foyle Cup this week all the best of luck, and I hope all the kids have a fantastic week. And there's something I want to mention too that happened on the weekend. A young lad from Letterkenny, Shane Porter, I believe his name is. Shane Porter from Letterkenny. He was over with three teammates from down the country at a big darts tournament, the WDF European Cup in Latvia. And this was while the World Match Play, Match Play Championships were happening in the professional scene. But anyway, Shane Porter from Letterkenny, he was with in his team, Aidan O'Hara, Sean McKeown, and Callum Crode, Cody. They're from down the country, as I say, but Shane from Letterkenny. They won the boys, boys team champions and overall boys winners, at the WDF European Cup in Latvia at the weekend. I think they landed home. They landed home yesterday. So a nice wee achievement and a future dart star of the start. And the reason I'm mentioning this is because I think Shane can go all the way, right? And you know how big darts is at the moment, and there can be big nights in Dublin. You know, he could be playing Luke Littler in about 5 or 6 years' time or whatever. And I kind of want to get on the bandwagon early so I can get access to tickets. So well done, Shane. Hi, Greg. In relation to road safety adverts, why do the powers that be in RTE think it's necessary to make them humorous? Example, electric scooters, people walking around an office dressed as cars or scooters. I see young people daily on these scooters without helmets, and people in drag being asked to put on a seatbelt. If you would, if you need to see them, Greg, I have seen them. That's the ones about the one where the fellas in drag, that's for the safe backseat passengers telling them to put the seatbelt on. A caller says that would all make him livid. There's nothing funny about people being killed. I don't know what I don't know what I know exactly what you're saying. I've seen the adverts. Bring a bit of humour into it. Does that mean maybe it'll land with people that maybe ordinarily it wouldn't? I don't know. I think the seatbelt one, I don't understand why the fella's dressed up as a woman, but I think the seatbelt one is pretty good in that it might capture that moment, a young fella, and you can be a wee bit self-conscious, is afraid of turning around and looking a wee bit soft or whatever it might be, and asking his mate to put his seatbelt on. I think the messaging of that one is good. I have no problem with I don't know the context of the drag dressing up as a woman. I know he dresses up as a superhero or a wrestler or something as well. But anyway, what do you think? 086 60 25,000, is there something in that maybe this should be a bit more hard-hitting? I mean, we've had generations and generations of the hard-hitting ads, so maybe a bit of humor, maybe it might reach people it normally wouldn't. I don't know. Now we're joined on the program by Natasha O'Brien. Natasha, good morning to you. Thank you so much for taking the call today.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Natasha, how are you doing? Because I think in all of the conversation that's been going on over the last little while, the victim kind of has got forgotten in it, and that victim is you, right? So you've had to deal with this horrendous assault. You had to deal with the trial. You spoke out and supported to a great extent, but lambasted in that. So it's an awful lot for any person to deal with, and I've no doubt you're a very strong person, but I'm just curious, overall, how are you doing?
Oh, yeah, I'm absolutely shattered, but, I mean, it's really easy to do something when you know it's not just you. You know, it's when it's so much, if I was doing this for myself, I would have thrown in the towel a long time ago. I would have said, this isn't worth it. Do you know what? I would just rather just move on with what bit of my life I have and just prepare. But in the knowledge that what I'm doing and what I'm advocating for and what I'm speaking about might actually impact the next victim and help them in some capacity, that's why I have to keep going. That's why I don't want to stop, because I don't want anyone to have to go through what I went through. And that's what's given me my power. All victims, male, female, anyone. So many have come forward explaining horror stories that they've had, that they've dealt with in the courts, and so much more. And also, so many with fear of reporting and not wanting to and not want to have to go through what I went through. And I completely understand. I wish part of me kind of wishes, Jesus, I didn't do it. I wish I didn't go through all of this, but I'm happy I did because I learned the reality. I didn't know how bad it was. I didn't know how messed up our systems are. And I didn't know how it makes it easy for me to keep going. It makes it, because I know it's going to make a difference.
Much of the conversation feels to be as if this whole story starts at the trial and not back where you were the victim of a horrific assault. I don't want to re-traumatise you in any way, shape or form, but as much as you're comfortable about, can you talk to me about the night that you were assaulted and what you remember and how things played out, but only as much as you're comfortable in doing so,
yeah,
Natasha?
Yeah, no. Absolutely, Greg. And I think for me, what I'm doing at the moment is I'm trying to say, hey, guys, look, something happened to me on an individual level. It was horrible. It was, you know, atrocious. And that's one situation. But, you know, when you go into the justice system, you expect to be protected. You expect a criminal to be reprimanded. You expect justice. And so really, like, it is, you know, but you do have to look at the facts of what happened to me and what I went through to grasp the whole picture of how bad our system is. Because everything I speak about and everything I went through, that was presented in court from walking home from a shift in work with my friend, because we were told in Ireland and outside of Ireland to don't walk alone at night, it's not safe. Men know that too. You know, everybody knows it's not safe to walk alone at night. And, you know, it's universal. And it's, you know, that common text when you get home safe, because none of us know, are we going to get home safe? We don't know. We never know. No matter what, no matter if we're with somebody else and we're, you know, so I was walking home and myself and my friend were walking past these group of boys, and about six males, and they were shouting really aggressively, very, very, like, very threateningly over at this young male walking by himself at the other side of the road with really, 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 like, horrible homophobic slurs, and just real malicious malice in what they were doing. And me being me, I've always been outspoken. I've always, you know, I've never, you know, I'm not the kind of person that can turn the other cheek and look away from something horrible happening. And like what was in front of us, it felt like there something seriously bad could unfold here. So, you know, trying to play an active role in just being a normal citizen that's looking out for others, just said, hey lads, don't be using those kind of words. Like, you know, come on. And I was just met with extreme aggression, and my perpetrator then obviously I felt didn't want to be held accountable for his actions, probably wasn't used to being held accountable, because in our society people do this all the time. People speak to other people like this, people like threaten other people, people are violent to each other. So I think it was also a shock that how dare someone tell him that he can't be violent. You know, so then that resulted in physical violence where he attacked me and beat me unconscious. And my friend stood there and watched him as he continued to beat me while I was unconscious, and watched his five friends stand around, do absolutely nothing, walk away. And she was screaming for help at the top of her lungs. She was frozen in fear. She's a small girl. She's about 5'2", you know, she's not going to be much help to some 6'3" big guy, you know, like she's just, and she was screaming for help. And thankfully, a male that was drinking in a pub down the road heard the screams and ran down and pulled him off me. But yeah, like that's the event of the night.
Yeah, there's no way anything could be justified or any way, shape or form, but maybe someone could say you know, something triggered and then there'd be instant regret or whatever. And maybe that could be some sort of a defence. I don't know. But that wasn't the case. He boasted about it then. He went on to boast about it.
But it's just, I've cried for it long enough. And, you know, it's laughable because of what was presented in the courts, and for them to not see anything wrong with that, not take action. That's why it's so laughable.
Now, before it all blew up as well to Natasha, I was reading the court reports. Let's not forget that if you hadn't really said anything, I think really this would have stood. It was a fully suspended sentence. And reading the judge's commentary here, and I can only trust the journalists that were present, it wasn't about Natasha's job. It wasn't about the impact on Natasha. It wasn't about how Natasha can move forward in life. It was all about the consequences of a custodial sentence on the perpetrator, that being Cathal Crotty. Is that exactly how it was, that the focus of the judge's commentary was really about, this young lad, we can't rob his career off him and all this kind of stuff?
And this happens time and time again. I was shocked when I was at the centre. Well, I would say maybe I was the furthest away from the centre of all of this. I was shocked, but from speaking to so many other victims, it's the exact way so many judges speak to so many victims. It's almost universal, but you know, it really is. I just faced my attacker for the first time since that whole ordeal and read out a victim impact statement. Don't know how I did it. I was on autopilot. I was out of body. I was looking down on myself because I couldn't, and I stood up there and read my statement out. And when I finished, the judge looked down at me and he said, Miss O'Brien, I understand the impact the this has had on you. However, are you aware of how fortunate you are that the perpetrator took the guilty plea and did not compound your trauma further? And you can't answer judges back, but he asked me a question. I'm going to answer it. And I said, Your Honour, I've been suffering for 2 long years. It's hardly going to go away anytime soon. Do you know what I mean? Like, what do you mean he'll compound my trauma? You're doing that exact thing, right? You're the one compounding my trauma right now. He's not. You are, you know. And then the commanding officer in the Irish Defence Forces, he was over my perpetrator. After I sat back down and after my victim impact statement, he stood up and it was almost in defence to what I had said, in defence to the impact it had on me. It was like a debate. It was a debate that here, I'm the victim, this happened to me, this is how I suffered. And up stands this important figure, this influential figure whose word is maybe more important than some random girl from some, you know, that has no status to say, well, in his defence, he's an exemplary, mannerly soldier and this is out of character. I would very, very much hope it's out of character.
Yeah. And also, too, the guilty plea, did that not come somewhat later in the day once CCTV footage became available, or did I misread that?
So I was kept in the dark for 2 years. I made my statement. I didn't do it for about 4 weeks. When I was first attacked, I literally just shut down, full shutdown. Didn't even want to think about what happened. Didn't want to accept that it happened to me. But then obviously I was suffering with a lot of physical injuries, with a fractured nose, with a really bad concussion. I was getting like vomiting, nausea, dizziness, blackouts, fainting all the time. That lasted for about 3 months. But I got a kind of almost an attack of it, of symptoms, about 3 weeks later, and alerted my doctor, and my doctor sent me straight out for an emergency brain scan to rule out a brain bleed, and I got loads of different tests, and it was just really traumatic. There was some serious brain damage here. Potentially. Well, of course, I've had concussions. I used to do horse riding when I was younger, and I might be dizzy for a few hours or not remember my date of birth or something. You know, or maybe it might take me a week or two to get over it. But this was 3 months of confusion and dizziness and vomiting. It took me about, it wasn't until after that brain bleed scare that my mother turned around to me and said, Natasha, you have to report it. And I said, I don't want to. I don't want to go in there and relive it. I don't want to have to go through every detail. I don't want to think about it. I want to put it behind me. She said, Natasha, you need to report it. It's so important that something like this is reported. You cannot. I know you don't want to deal with it. I know you don't want to accept it, but you have to report it. It's just, you know, and I just, she drove me down to the station, the local state guard station, and I sat in the car for about 2 hours crying, and I couldn't go in. And then she rang a friend to get me out of the car and walk me in. So yeah, I did.
Does your mum feel bad about that now, or does she still think it was the right thing
to do? I can't, you know, I have to thank her for doing that.
Yeah, so you didn't lick it off the grass. Now, the thing about it is though, right, and this is not my view, but it's just me trying to get to some of the commentary out there. I think you don't look like a victim and you don't sound like a victim, if that makes sense, right? You are clearly right, but you don't look and sound like it. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, people don't like your message because they can hear you. Does that, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So in you advocating for, it could be my daughter, my sister, my mother, my aunt, right?
You?
I'm just going to stay on the gender lines okay, Natasha. It could be.
No worries.
And yet, just because it's you when you're speaking out, for some people think that, I don't know, you had it coming to you, you're uppity, you know, what about Paul Cahill Crotty, his side of the story? It's remarkable. I think it's actually really quite telling, and it kind of pulls the curtain back on public attitude a little bit, because you're speaking out and because you are a strong voice of advocacy, it seems quite threatening to people.
It is definitely a big issue. And I would firstly just say that I have always been uppity. I've always been outspoken. I've always been me. And I struggled with it for a long time. I was like this as a teenager, and I did not have an easy life in school. I was the black sheep. People were always telling me to shut up and I'm annoying. And like, you know, if a teacher taught me something I didn't agree with, I wouldn't just stay quiet. And that was everyone. Nobody liked that. Nobody liked that I wouldn't come forward. And I used to hate not fitting in. I used to hate not being accepted. I used to cry all the time and just wonder, why am I so different? So now I have a really, really thick skin, and I have years of experience with criticism and being told to be quiet for other reasons that, Now I don't have any issue in doing the right thing, and you know, I see the criticism, but it's nothing I haven't heard before.
Yeah, but sometimes it does kind of have to be called out, because ironically, some of the most horrendous criticism of you is coming from the same mouths of people that talk about, you know, protecting Irish women. And I can't see how any person can't see the irony in all of that.
What I will say, I will say that, you know, I have seen all those comments, and I have spoken to a number of different women in the public eye, and a few men as well in the public eye, that have, you know, given me some advice and stuff, but also spoken to me about how they're, and I think I'd like to, you know, like, I questioned the judge's decision, I questioned the actions of my perpetrator that night when he was doing something wrong. I think it's human nature to question. I think it's human nature to be curious. And I think if people weren't asking questions to some degree, because people don't know me, my whole story, that's okay. Like, people can ask questions and I'm not going to be bothered by that. But it is very, very frightening, really frightening, to see the level of outrage for me advocating, for me speaking. I've had so many, he didn't hit her hard enough. He should have finished her while he had the chance. What else? There are men now approaching women there's men approaching women in bars. And when women are denying their advances, they will quote my perpetrator, Cahill Crotty, and say two to put her down, two to put her out. It's shocking. It's frightening. And that's motivation for me to keep going, Greg, because I want to protect. I want to continue to educate people, continue to advocate, so that because there are these people out there. There are these people out there that do not have our best interest at heart, that do not want to support each other. And we all need to, the people that want the best for everyone else, we all need to do our bit to protect ourselves from those that don't.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we sort of got an insight into, and I don't, I'm not into sort of collective punishment, right? But we did get an insight maybe into how there is certain thinking with the Irish Defence Forces in that we heard that in the court, right? And we also know that the reality is that Cathal Crotty would probably still be in the Defence Forces right now if you hadn't spoken out. But we also learned that the public have a serious issue with court sentencing, whether it's violence against a woman, where it's people possessing the most horrendous child abuse images, just walking out, 10,000 of them on Thursday. Just walking. The public don't want this. Listen, no one's looking for heads on a stick, but generally your case added into the others, the public have a serious issue with how we treat very serious offences. Slaps on the wrist, suspended sentences.
Now, I will say this, that I have also received some hate messages in regards to, what about Cathal Crotty? What if someone hurts him? What if something happens to him? How are you going to forgive yourself? And that's serious, because I'm here advocating for zero violence. So I'm not at all looking for more violence. I don't want any more people harmed. I'm fighting with my words here. That's all we can do, because that's the right way to do it. And, you know, it is really, it's really, really disappointing to know that there are people trying to blame this individual for the failure of an entire system. You know, he's responsible for his actions, but that's where that ends. I'm not talking about what happened to me. I'm talking about what happens to everybody all the time and what needs to, I'm talking about how to change for the future. And I think when there is that portion of the public that are directing all their anger at that individual, and to that I'm saying, that's wasted energy, because you need to realise that no one would know my name, no one would know his name, if the system worked, if the justice had been, if, you know, there had been consequences, there had been justice and everything was done, but if things were, you know, carried out efficiently, the judge had sensitivity towards the victim. The judge didn't want to preserve a career of a violent man in a peacekeeping force. You know, and this is where it's wrong. It's not the individual's actions. They're wrong in their own sense. However, I believe that, you know, had there been adequate justice, there would have been a potential for that individual to move on with his life too. He may have learned, but now his life is forever destroyed. Everyone is losers here. We're all losers here because of the system, because of the people in charge.
And just in relation to that, it's worth pointing out that, and as I say, there's an awful lot of people in the Defence Forces. I'm not painting all with the same brush, but 68 serving members of the Defence Forces have criminal convictions or are before the courts. So that means that even though there is a code of conduct there, either being convicted of or suspected of a crime does not really preclude you from being in the army, because 68 in total are serving at the moment with criminal convictions or indeed are before the courts. And indeed, Simon Harris has said that's something that needs to be looked at. And now I believe the DPP are appealing this. I don't know what would be satisfactory, what wouldn't be satisfactory. What for you going forward, Natasha? People want to know what you think about the Justice Minister. I mean, you said we must accept now, really, that you can't walk on your own. Maybe that's just the reality. But what is your view on the Justice Minister, that we are at the point, it's not all her doing, of course, but we're at the point where the streets are unsafe?
So, Greg, I've been in the Dáil the last 3 weeks in a row. I've met with a number of different TDs and politicians and parties. The Labour Party raised a motion two weeks ago calling for reforms in judiciary, reforms in sentencing guidelines, more sensitivity training for judges, that there is a more victim-centred approach in a courtroom, more implementation of a zero tolerance policy, because at the moment it's just an empty promise. It's just a word. There's no action. And, you know, that was the response to that motion was slightly underwhelming, because I was there And, you know, Ivana Bavchuk of the Labour Party said, you know, Natasha is here. And I spoke to her this morning, and what she would like to see in our system is humanity, because there is none. So, you know, your big girl job and sort that out.
I think in certain matters of national importance, I don't think things should be political. It would be great if we had a system whereby...
Not political.
But it's not you politicizing it, but you know,
I'm not political.
Yeah, no,
I'm not political.
I know, yeah, but yeah. My point is Labour might put forward a motion, and then Fine Gael might say, well, we need to address this, but we're going to do it our way. That if we could come together on big things and sort of have a cross-party agreement, so better life for victims.
I do think that there was a number of TDs that came from independents, all parties, all for the motion. There was no against. It was universal. And that's what I say to people, that, oh, what's Natasha O'Brien's gender? Oh, what's her politics? And like, maybe down the line I might consider going into politics if I could actually do and make a difference. But at the moment, I have 24 years of experience in being a human being. I don't know much about politics. I don't know much about law. I've lived a life, and I know what's right and wrong, and I know what's decent and I know what's indecent. And that's what I'm talking about here. And I think the majority of the population can agree with that. I think it's not rocket science. It's black and white. And sometimes it's not, but this is black and white.
Yeah, I get you.
The Social Democrats last week, again, another motion. All the parties are doing this. All the TDs are speaking about this and raised, looking for, they wanted immediate action. They called for evidence of, you know, what are you doing right now to ensure that victims are not victimized and blamed and traumatized by you, by the courts, by the system? How do we protect our people?
Can I just add into that too? There's also a conversation going on at the moment about sexual assault victims, their counselling notes being used in evidence in court cases, things like that. I think most people would say that doesn't make sense. That's not the way we should be moving forward. Natasha, listen, thanks for so much of your time. I do appreciate it. And it's been an interesting and an insightful conversation. It's been nice to chat to you. Take care of yourself, Natasha.
Thank you, Greg. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. See you soon. We recently received an email asking us to discuss sexual harassment in the workplace. The harassment first started with banter, and when he wasn't getting the response he was looking for, it led into general intimidation, belittling of me in the presence of others. But now it's leading into sexual harassment, little things being said of a sexual nature and slight touching passing me by. It's getting very creepy to the point where I don't want to go to work, never mind participate in nights out. This guy's my direct boss, so I need to have the right information before I proceed. My friend said to just leave, but I feel if I do, he'll just carry on and the next person may not be as strong to deal with him. So, Greg, my question is, how do I build a case? Well, Philip Tracy is a senior solicitor with Coleman Legal and is with us now. Good morning to you. Thank you so much for your time. Greatly appreciated.
Good morning, Greg, to you and to your listeners. Thank you for having me on.
Right, so your initial reaction then to the caller's dilemma?
Yes, I mean, that's obviously a very, very unfortunate situation to be in. We all want to go to work, we want to earn a living, we want to pay bills, and then you're faced with that harassment. So sexual harassment in the workplace is covered under the Employment Equality Acts of 1998 to 2015. And sexual harassment is unwanted conduct of a sexual nature. It may be physical, it may be verbal, it may be pictures, it may be whistling, any sort of written conduct. It can happen in the workplace. It can happen for people who are working remotely. It can be carried out by a colleague, a boss. It can be carried out even by a client or a customer of the business. So those who are in that situation, it's extremely unfortunate, but there is a case that could be brought under the Employment Equality Acts.
And often in your experience, is it the case that people responsible for this believe they can carry on with it without consequence?
Sometimes that can certainly happen, and it seems that the person has made that inquiry and that's been going on for a while. So the perpetrator of those acts upon her doesn't seem to be all that concerned. It seems to be looking for a reaction, and the less that this person reacts, the more that this perpetrator seems determined to keep at that person. But most cases, any company in particular or management in the company certainly would not want something like that going on in the first place. And then if they are being brought to the WRC for a claim, that obviously causes very serious concerns, not only for the victim of it, but certainly for the reputation of the employer. So
what advice would you give this person in the first instance? Because going to the WRC sounds like, you know, quite a bit down the road. I'm not sure. Do you have to use the mechanisms within the company, as much as they may or may not exist, before moving on? Or how do you suggest that this person move forward?
Yes, but employers should have a code of policy of conduct or for what is unacceptable behaviour in the workplace. And that should be given to everybody upon commencement of employment. Therein will give the victim, the employees indeed, a guideline as to what they can do, what procedures they can follow. They can be raised formally within work or informally, which would be talking to the person, asking them to stop. I'm guessing that this has been going on for quite some time, that the victim in this instance has probably gone beyond asking the person, I think is a boss or a superior to her.
Yeah, definitely a line manager at least anyway.
So that obviously, it does an imbalance of power there. It makes it more difficult. They could go up to somebody more senior and do it that way. But I think the victim in this instance needs to consider whether or not she wants to actually stay there. You know, nobody wants to leave a job. It's a source of income. It pays the bills, as I said at the start. But if it's their intention to leave, you know, perhaps saying something in work may not serve any good, but certainly put her own manager on notice that this has been happening.
But Philip, just in terms of how the company might deal with it, so let's just say, for instance, that the person responsible is brought into a meeting and says, I didn't realise that, I'm a touchy-feely person, I thought we were having the crack, I'll never ever do it again. But the person who was subjected to the language and the touching and what have you might say, that's fine, but I actually don't really feel I can continue to work under this person. Now, of course, it depends on the size of the company and if people could be moved around and what have you, but in most cases, perhaps not. So what could the, having reported it, what realistically could the victim expect?
Well, certainly any employee in the situation should definitely report it. That's the first thing. It absolutely should be brought to the employer's attention, because an employer can potentially say, well, we didn't know what was going on, so you've decided to leave because of something that we were never aware of. But what they could happen to expect is that would be a formal investigation. And again, the code of the procedures booklet that the employer should have should set out how that would work. There'd be an investigation, all parties would be interviewed, and then ideally by an independent outside person would come into the company to do that, so there's no bias, there's no fear or anything like that. And then ultimately a finding is made. And in relation to the perpetrator say, well, I didn't mean any offence, but I didn't know this was causing a problem. That's not really good enough, where it's, especially when it's going on for a prolonged period of time.
So ignorance is not a defence, really.
It's not a defence, no. And the victim, it's how the victim, you know, how that impacts her. She's the one who's having these things said to her, done to her. So it's not really, you know, good enough to just simply say, oh, well, I thought it was just a bit of crack. I didn't know it was causing harm. You know, anything of a sexual nature, I would advise any, say, an employer client, do not do it. Just don't go there, because you are asking for trouble. Nobody deserves that in the workplace. And it can lead into a very, very big problem.
So, if the victim follows the correct pathways within the company, unsatisfied with the outcome, or perhaps even says, "Look, I can't work in this building with this person any longer," and they leave, is that the end of it, or can they pursue the company perhaps for allowing this to happen in the workspace and effectively costing the person their livelihood, even though they voluntarily left?
They certainly could. You could bring a claim, as I said earlier on there, under the Employment Equality Act for sexual harassment in the workplace. There's also a potential personal injury claim there. This has had an impact either physically or psychologically upon somebody. And so there are a number of avenues that somebody could take. Just to also note to your listener that they should initiate a case to the WRC under the Employment Equality Act within 6 months of the last incident of harassment. That's very important. If you miss that deadline, that is a problem. But in relation to what the employer may or may not do, then of course they're going to consider it as a whole. Can they move people around? If the victim feels that she can't work there anymore, they potentially could go down the road of a constructive dismissal claim, because the employer has been made aware of something and they haven't done enough to resolve the matter, and they haven't made that person safe in the workplace.
So say this person hasn't necessarily escalated it in the workplace as of yet, but on your advice is saying, right, I need to do that. Could they still engage Coleman Legal or another legal practice at this point? Or is it a case of going through the internal processes and then weighing up their options?
Certainly, yeah, you get absolutely, you can contact, and that listener can certainly have my contact details if she wishes. There's no difficulty with that. But I would definitely encourage somebody to, you know, a victim in those circumstances, to initially at least speak with a solicitor, and just to be careful about how they go about it, and certainly to make that initial complaint to the employer, say this is happening, just so they're on notice. As I said, if the employer doesn't know, you can't then subsequently say, well, you should have sorted it out if they didn't know. But yes, absolutely. I would encourage somebody to speak to a solicitor just to make sure that they handle it the right way. They follow the internal procedures. And ultimately, then, if they're going to go down the WRC or potentially a personal injury claim for the psychological injury, usually in these cases, that has caused, absolutely you should speak to a solicitor.
Yeah, because there are people who sometimes would say to you that they feel the human resources is there to protect the interests of the business and not necessarily the interests of its employees.
Yes, certainly. That is a concern of a lot of people. And as I said, when we were talking about the formal investigation, ideally it would be somebody external from the company would come in. And then that way it would be, you know, should be at least on paper, it should be an independent view. But certainly the employer will absolutely be concerned. There's no doubt about it. This is, you know, very, very bad news, not only for the victim. You know, they potentially have failed their employee, but from a PR point of view, having your name as, you know, an employer that this is going on in, that's obviously not a good thing.
And finally, there's obviously a lot of small, medium-sized businesses where this person talking of could actually be the company owner. Does everything still apply the same, even in that scenario?
Yeah, obviously that makes it extremely difficult, because if it's a company owner, that's the very top person. But again, they should at least make it known that this has happened and detail what has happened. And again, it's putting the employer on notice that this has happened. I do have quite a few clients where it has in fact been the owner who's been carrying out some of the most vile examples of sexual harassment in the workplace. Yes, that makes it obviously exceptionally difficult. And in those cases, sometimes the employee decides to leave, because where do they turn to, especially if it's a very small company?
Yeah. Okay, fascinating. Philip, thank you so much for your time. It's greatly appreciated, okay? Hopefully that helps our listener. That's Philip Treacy there, Senior Solicitor with Coleman Legal.